Throughout history, remarkable men and women have left behind ideas capable of changing the course of a life. In each episode, we'll explore one section of a timeless book, uncovering the enduring wisdom, practical lessons, and powerful stories that continue to shape thoughtful lives today. These are more than book summaries. They are an invitation to join great dialogue that has connected generations of readers, leaders, and lifelong learners. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Dialogue on Dialogue. Welcome back to the Dialogue on Dialogue podcast. In this new series, we're walking alongside Ben Franklin through his autobiography to discover what his remarkable life can still teach us about learning, character, success, and becoming just a little bit better every day. This is part 7. Success is built on character and measured by contribution. Have you ever noticed that some people spend all of their energy trying to look successful, while others quietly just go on becoming successful? Benjamin Franklin believed there was a difference, and he once wrote that he made it a point to not only look to be industrious, but also to actually be industrious. Not by pretending to work, but actually working so consistently that everyone around him noticed. In today's chapter, Franklin's printing business begins to really flourish. But what's fascinating isn't just how it became successful, it's what he chose to do with that success. By this point in his life, Franklin's printing business was beginning to gain real momentum. One opportunity led to another, thanks in part to an argument he developed during his discussion with his junto. Franklin believed Pennsylvania needed a larger supply of money to encourage commerce and economic growth. After refining his thinking through debate with his friends in the junto, he published an anonymous pamphlet making the case for more money in the system. The argument was persuasive. Not only did Pennsylvania increase the amount of currency in circulation, but Franklin earned the contract to print it. Not a bad deal for him. The very ideas he had sharpened through thoughtful discussion became an opportunity for his business. Looking back, Franklin attributed much of his early success to something surprisingly simple. He worked constantly. He avoided deliberately placing himself where people wasted time by slight taverns and idle gatherings and the endless socializing that held very little appeal for him. He wanted to be productive. More importantly, he wanted people to know he was dependable. He observed that merchants were willing to extend him credit because they consistently saw him hard at work. His reputation became one of his greatest assets. There was one exception to his rule against idleness: reading. Franklin never considered reading to be wasted time. In his mind, books were an investment that paid dividends for the rest of his life. As Franklin's business grew, many of his competitors began to struggle. His former employer, who had tried to make him fix up the business and then pay him less, accumulated a lot of debt. Eventually, he sold his business and left Philadelphia. The apprentice who took over couldn't manage the business either. One by one, competitors disappeared. Franklin wasn't succeeding because others failed. He was succeeding because he consistently did the ordinary things exceptionally well. Hard work, financial discipline, continuous learning, reliable service. Eventually, there was only one meaningful competitor left. And Franklin believed that that particular printer lacked the same dedication to the craft. Professionally, Franklin's life was stabilizing. Personally, it was too. After several unsuccessful courtships, he reconnected with Deborah Reed, whom he had known years earlier, even before leaving for London. The two eventually married. Franklin speaks warmly of her throughout the book, and of her practical nature and the valuable partnership that they formed. She wasn't simply just Mrs. Ben Franklin. She became an essential partner in building their household and supporting his business. Reading this chapter, one thought continually came to mind. To the people around Franklin, his life probably looked very ordinary. He was simply another hardworking printer. No one could have guessed that they were watching the early life of one of America's greatest future founding fathers. Sometimes greatness doesn't announce itself. Sometimes it quietly builds itself. Perhaps the most lasting achievement of this chapter came from another conversation within the Junto. The members realized that individually they owned only a modest number of books. Together, however, they possessed a fairly impressive library, so they pooled their collections. The idea eventually expanded into a subscription library where members could borrow books. The concept spread throughout Philadelphia and beyond. Franklin believed it made the citizens of Philadelphia among the most read people in all of the colonies, and helped make reading fashionable. Make reading great again, I think would have been his slogan. One simple idea multiplied into an institution that educated generations. Despite growing prosperity, Franklin refused to abandon simplicity. He continued living frugally. In one memorable story, he recalls that his wife surprised him by purchasing a beautiful china bowl and spoon. He laughed that this small purchase felt like an extravagant luxury. Even success didn't tempt him toward unnecessary excesses. The chapter closes with Franklin reflecting on religion. Now, Franklin believed that deeply in a God and valued religion in its role in society. Although he didn't regularly attend church services, he devoted his Sundays to reading and self-education. He judged religious traditions less by their rituals than by whether they encouraged people to become more moral, more charitable, and more useful members of society. For Franklin, faith found its highest expression in how people treated one another. So looking back, here are some lessons that I picked up from this chapter. Lesson one, your reputation is built when no one is watching. Franklin understood something many people, even today, overlook. People extend trust before they extend opportunity. Merchants trusted him because they consistently observed his discipline. They didn't rely on advertising, they relied on observation. The habits people see every day eventually become the reputation they associate with your name. Lesson number two, invest in institutions, not just yourself. Franklin could have kept buying books for himself. Instead, he asked a bigger question. How can everyone benefit? That single question produced one of America's first subscription libraries. Great leaders eventually stop asking, how can I succeed? They begin asking, how can I build something that helps others succeed? Lesson number three, ordinary days build extraordinary lives. One of my favorite reflections from this chapter is imagining how ordinary Franklin appeared to everyone around him. No one saw a future founding father. They saw a printer, a husband, a businessman, someone working long hours, grinding away for his family. History often looks dramatic in hindsight. Living it usually doesn't feel that way. It feels wonderfully ordinary. Don't underestimate the significance of your daily activities. They're quietly becoming and turning you into having an extraordinary life. Lesson number four, wealth is a tool, not a trophy. Even after achieving financial success, Franklin remained remarkably disciplined. His joy didn't come from buying expensive possessions. It came from creating value, from learning new ideas and improving his community. Modern culture often encourages us to spend more as we earn more. Franklin reminds us that freedom often comes from needing less. So chapter 8 is where Franklin's vision becomes more expansive. He's no longer simply building a successful printing business. He's building a successful city, a library, a stronger economy, thoughtful conversations through the Junto, a stable marriage, a reputation that others trust. And it's a reminder that real success isn't measured only by what we accumulate. It's measured by what we leave behind. As Franklin's life unfolds, one truth becomes increasingly clear. His greatest legacy wouldn't be the money he earned. It wouldn't be the people he influenced and the institutions he built that continued improving the lives long after he was gone. Remember, the lessons are older than we are, and just as valuable today.